A friend of mine who was studying Buddhism once asked me, what if the Dalai Lama is a psychopath? He wasn't alleging anything about the current Dalai Lama, obviously. He's a good guy. What he meant was, since the Dalai Lama is chosen as a toddler, what happens if that toddler grows into a really mentally screwed up person just by bad luck? My answer was, I don't know, obviously, but I thought that maybe, since his life would consist of meditation, studying inner peace, and preparing to be a great spiritual leader for as long as he can possibly remember, he would end up learning to suppress or even completely overcome his violent urges, and nobody would ever suspect a thing. But I think I might be wrong about that. No, there never was a psychopath Dalai Lama. But there was a Dalai Lama whose education about rejecting earthly pleasures could have gone a little further. Remember my episode about bad popes, or at least fun popes? There have been bad, or at least fun, Dalai Lamas too. Tsongyang Gyatso was the sixth Dalai Lama, born in the late 17th century, and died when he was 24. His tenure as the Dalai Lama was marked by partying, drinking, and total rejection of his religious and spiritual duties. The impact of his time as the leader of Tibet led to Qing Dynasty China installing their own Dalai Lama as the real Dalai Lama and nearly leading to the destruction of Tibetan Buddhism. He also wrote a lot of not-safe-for-work poems. I'm your host, Tor Parsons. This is my co-host, Jollibee the Durian, and welcome to the first ever guest-submitted and mostly guest-written episode of Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities. This episode is brought to you by a fan of the show. That's right, this is my first fan-written episode. Everybody, please welcome Nick Miller. He reached out to me out of nowhere, told me about his own incredible life story. He grew up with missionaries in the South American jungle and was part of a diplomatic mission to North Korea. And he said, Tor, knowing that you're interested in China and in fun, weird people, have I got a story for you? I've extended this script a little with some clarifications on the historical setting and the inner workings of Tibetan Buddhism, and I've made it a little punchier and a little more in line with my typical style, but this is still largely Nick's script, so everyone thank Nick in the comments. Here's the man himself.
Hi everyone, my name's Nick Miller. I'm the co-author to the video on understanding the interesting intricacies of the sixth Dalai Lama and his impact on Tibetan Chinese politics and history.
Tsongyang Gyatso was born in 1683 in a deeply troubled period of Tibetan history. Imperial China and Tibet had had a tumultuous history with multiple invasions of Tibet by various imperial dynasties. The first invasion occurred during the Tang Dynasty, which lasted until 907 AD, but it wasn't until 1244 when Tibet fell to outside powers under Genghis Khan. Under Mongol rule, Tibet was placed under Khanate protection. Under the Yuan Dynasty, which is what the Chinese called Mongol rule, the Mongolian leadership converted from their traditional tribal religion of Tengriism to Tibetan Buddhism. Kublai Khan, grandson of Genghis Khan, looked to the Tibetan Lamas to serve as their chief spiritual advisors. Later on, in the 1500s, a Mongol king created the title of Dalai Lama to refer to the leader of their religion, naming Sonam Gyatso as the third Dalai Lama, Star Wars Episode 4 style, and Tibetan Buddhism's two greatest spiritual leaders before this point were retroactively considered the previous Dalai Lamas. Dalai is Mongolian for ocean, which is what Gyatso means in Tibetan. It doesn't have a profound spiritual meaning to it. In 1644, the relationship between Tibet and Imperial China changed after the Manchurians created the last Imperial Chinese dynasty, the Qing Dynasty. In 1648, the Qing Emperor called upon the 5th Dalai Lama to ally with the Qing to prevent the Mongols from invading the Qing Empire. During the 5th Dalai Lama's reign, a few important traditions were established that are still seen in modern-day Chinese Tibetan politics. The 5th Lama created the office of the Panchen Lama to oversee an administrative region of Tibet and serve as the Dalai Lama number 2. An unintended consequence of the creation of the role of the Panchen Lama was the fact that promoting disputes between the Dalai Lama and Panchen Lama has been used by the Chinese government as a way to cause friction and divide the Tibetan people since the 1600s. In 1682, the 5th Dalai Lama died. The Tibetan government was afraid that the Qing dynasty would use the Dalai Lama's death as the perfect time to invade. To prevent this, the Tibetan clergy hid his death for 14 years. Whenever Qing officials wanted to meet with him, they stated that he was sequestered in meditation and could not be seen by anyone. The architect of this Weekend at Bernie's routine was the Prime Minister of Tibet, Desi Sangye Gyatso, who was rumored to scandalously be the 5th Dalai Lama's son. Like the Pope, the Dalai Lama was not supposed to do any sex. He also held the title of acting regent until the reincarnation of the Dalai Lama was found. When Mongol princes insisted on having an audience with the Dalai Lama, an old monk called Depa Derab of Namgyal Monastery, who supposedly resembled the Dalai Lama, was hired to pose in his place. He wore a hat and an eye shade to conceal the fact that he lacked the Dalai Lama's apparently distinctive piercing eyes. How do the Tibetan monks correctly identify a reincarnated monk? According to Tibetan Buddhism, the spirit of the Dalai Lama is reincarnated into the body of his successor at the time of their death. So they have to find someone in Tibet who was born around the time the previous Dalai Lama died who has signs of something special about them. When the current Dalai Lama, the 14th, was born, it was said that a rainbow appeared over his house. Typically, a search party of monks who knew the previous Dalai Lama gets sent out in disguise to test children to see if they can correctly identify the party members. The child also gets shown some toys and religious objects and must correctly pick out which items belong to his predecessor. For the 14th Dalai Lama, he correctly picked the rosary and then recited the Buddhist mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. If this whole routine sounds familiar, it may be because it's the way the air nomads identified Aang as the Avatar in Avatar The Last Airbender, since the air nomads are based on Tibetan Buddhists. This is my interjection into Nick's excellent script, but I really love how the ritual of finding the new Dalai Lama shows how confident Tibetan Buddhists are that their religion is right. Like, in Western religions, it's often almost official doctrine, or at least common practice, to explicitly say, no, we will not give you evidence of the supernatural acts we believe our God is capable of, because if there were obvious evidence for God, being faithful in God wouldn't be such a test. The idea of being faithful to the supernatural regardless of evidence is pretty central to the Abrahamic religions, whereas Tibetan Buddhism just seems to take it all for granted, treating their doctrine of reincarnation as an obvious truth like the changing of the seasons. Their doctrine is, well, our leader is the same person who keeps getting reincarnated. That's a fact, and facts don't care about your feelings. Therefore, accepting that as a fact, what's the reasonable, rational way we pick our leader? We do experiments to determine if you have memories of being our leader in your past life. I love that confidence so much. And, well, not to get all wooey on you, but I'll give you this. Carl Sagan, arguably one of the least wooey people of all time, was occasionally asked if there was any supernatural concept that he couldn't be sure was false and wanted scientists to take seriously as a possibility, and he would always say reincarnation. So the 6th Dalai Lama turned out to be Zhangyang Gyatso. He was born on March 1st, 1683 in Mon Tawang, which would currently be Arunachal Pradesh in northern India. In 1688, at the age of 5, he was brought to Lhasa and proclaimed to be the reincarnation of the 5th Dalai Lama. The 5th Panchen Lama, Lobsong Yeshe, made him recite the vows of a novice monk, and he was given the name Zhangyang Gyatso. Like the Pope taking on a papal name, every Dalai Lama takes on a new name that includes the name Gyatso, which In itself, like the title Dalai Lama, doesn't have a major spiritual meaning, but it was the name of the second Dalai Lama, and the third Dalai Lama changed his name in honor of the previous Gyatso, so every Dalai Lama since then has kept up the tradition by following in his footsteps. Because remember, the third Dalai Lama was the first one who was actually called Dalai Lama in his lifetime, so he was the one who established most of the traditions associated with being the Dalai Lama. In October 1697, Tsongnyang Gyatso was officially enthroned as the sixth Dalai Lama at the age of 14. During his teenage years, the sixth Dalai Lama would regularly rebel against the strict religious rules he had to live under. He would dress as a layman, going by the name Norsong Wangpo in public, and get drunk in bars and visit brothels. By 19 or 20, reports are conflicting, he renounced his monastic vows, left the imperial palace, and moved into a small apartment in Lhasa. This abdication threw Tibetan politics into total collapse. The Tibetan theocratic government ruled by divine right, and they had never had a leader abdicate their right to rule. Since the position was based on reincarnation, you couldn't just block the call. You were the reincarnation of the Dalai Lama, whether you wanted to be or not. So if the reincarnation of the Dalai Lama didn't want to be Dalai Lama, what was supposed to happen? You couldn't just name a new Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama was still alive. And some people were concerned, if the current Dalai Lama doesn't want to be Dalai Lama, does that mean that the entire institution and therefore the entire religion of Tibetan Buddhism is dead? Because, like, what happens when this guy dies and gets reincarnated? Dying may not stop him from not wanting to be the Dalai Lama. While Tsongnyang lived in his small Lhasa apartment, he wore blue silk robes and grew out his hair in long braids. He spent his days doing archery, drinking, and singing love songs. There's a popular belief in Tibet that the taverns Tsongnyang visited were later painted yellow to signify Tsongnyang drank there. Tsongnyang is known for extensive poetry that focused on his time with all the women and, according to some historians, sometimes men in his life. Here are some examples of his poetry. Hide your children. Green shoots planted last year, today are stacked as straw. Young man's body growing firmer than a horn bow. The girl of the marketplace and I made that true love knot. I did not try to untie it. It untied of its own accord. If the girl doesn't die, the beer will never stop. Indeed, I can name her a young man's safe haven. I'm not sure what that last one means, and it might be poorly translated, but it sounds like Tsongnyang is having a good time. If the girl doesn't die, that is! The breaking of his monastic vows and duties to Tibet did not come without consequences for Tsongnyang. The Mongol Khan, Hwasong, saw his conduct unbecoming of a Dalai Lama and coordinated with the Qing Emperor Kangxi to send an army into Tibet. The goal was to capture Tsongnyang Gyatso and have him declared a false incarnation of the fifth Dalai Lama. The Mongols saw their actions as justified because they saw the sixth Dalai Lama, Tsongnyang, as acting outside the Dharma, the holy laws of Buddhism. The Dharma is a concept in most branches of Buddhism, but only in Tibet were the religious laws so strictly codified. Okay, you may say, but isn't Tibetan Buddhism all about nonviolence? Isn't it a little un-Buddhist to respond to a Dalai Lama who can't keep it in his pants by declaring war? Well, not really. Apparently in Tibetan history, if Monastery A felt Monastery B was doing something that was against the Dharma, the monks could renounce their vow against violence to destroy the offending monastery and murder everyone inside to save the Dharma. The kicker is, guess how many times they were allowed to do that? The answer is 5 times. It's like the Monty Python Holy Grail Holy Hand Grenade of Antioch. So, in 1706, the Mongols invaded and successfully kidnapped Tsongnyang. After the capture of the 6th Dalai Lama, the Chinese Emperor Kangxi issued an imperial decree that allowed the Mongol Khan Hwasong governorship of Tibet. The Tibetan people refused to recognize the Mongol viceroy or the claims that the Qing Empire had over Tibet. Hwasong attempted to persuade the lamas to sanction his kidnapping of the 6th Dalai Lama, but they refused. Tsongnyang died while on his journey to Beijing. The Tibetans believed that the Mongolians murdered him. Hwasong declared a young lama, Ngawang Yeshe Gyatso to be the true incarnation of the Dalai Lama. The Panchen Lama blessed the enthronement in 1707. The installation was outright rejected by the Tibetan people, who still saw Tsongyang Gyatso as the real successor. The Kangxi Emperor recognized Yeshe Gyatso later on, in 1710. The Tibetan people called him the false Dalai Lama, or by his birth name, Pekar Tsingpa. So, the lamas began searching for the real Dalai Lama. Tsongyang Gyatso was dead, and a lot of Tibetans mourned him. Dereliction of duties notwithstanding, everyone recognized he was a fun guy. Yeshe Gyatso was on the throne, but nobody saw him as a legitimate Dalai Lama, so clearly, the new reincarnation had to be out there somewhere. By September 1708, the lamas declared they had found his reincarnation, Kelzong Gyatso, promptly hidden inside a series of monasteries not under control of the Mongolian Khanate. In 1717, Tibet was invaded by the Dzungars, who were a confederation of various Mongolian tribes from up around what's now Xinjiang. They were devout Buddhists and enemies of the Qing dynasty. The Dzungar invasion was at first welcomed because they murdered Hlasong and imprisoned Yeshe Gyatso, the false Dalai Lama, in a medical college. However, public support for the invasion evaporated when the Dzungars did not leave, but rather spent the next several years pillaging and having their way with women across Tibet. Kelzong Gyatso stayed secluded in his monastery and was not publicly known as the seventh Dalai Lama yet. When Tibetans and other non-Dzungar, non-Mongolian people in Tibet had to meet with Dzungar officials, they had to always stick their tongues out to see if they had been constantly reciting Buddhist mantras. Supposedly, if you had been reciting mantras, your tongue would be black and taken as a sign of piety. Back in those days, they didn't have Grape Jolly Ranchers, so you couldn't fake it, and the Dzungars came away with the impression that nobody in Tibet is very religious. In 1720, the three-year Dzungar occupation was finally put down by the Qing Empire, which had already mounted a failed attempt to take back Tibet from the Dzungars in 1718. Tibet was declared to be under the protection of the Qing Empire. On 15 October 1720, Kelzong Gyatso was installed as the seventh Dalai Lama. The false Dalai Lama was released from his medical college imprisonment, but officially defrocked of his lamahood and reportedly died in 1725. It's not known what he died from or where he died. He did have a handful of supporters in Tibetan Buddhism who recognized him as legitimate, and some people tried searching for his reincarnation. There were rumors that his reincarnation was found, but the child died of smallpox. Once the Qing Empire declared Tibet a Qing protectorate, they instituted court representatives, ambans, to oversee the Tibetan court. The seventh Dalai Lama was exiled from Lhasa due to his family holding anti-Qing sentiment. Just never ends for Tibet. This led the Qing government to install the Panchen Lama as co-ruler of Tibet to serve alongside the Qing ambans, who served as the representatives for the imperial government. Ambans were primarily used in territories that were considered tribute states of the Qing Empire rather than core parts of the empire, and the position was sort of halfway between a ruler and an ambassador. The ambans were officially in charge, but they were in charge of territory that was only ambiguously part of the empire, and they recognized that. For the Qing dynasty, if Tibet was stable, they had little interest in what was occurring inside the Tibetan kingdom. In practice, the Dalai Lama still ruled. The Qing dynasty, of course, thought they were saving Tibet from the clutches of the evil Dzungars, and they kind of were, but they let that go to their heads. The historical event of the removal of Dzungars and declaration of Tibet being a part of the Qing Empire is still used by the Chinese government today to justify its control over Tibet. Once you become under the domain of the Chinese government, you are always part of the Chinese government. Nick's script ends here, but this is something that has interested me a lot. China's institutions have persisted through changes of government. Although dynasties rose and fell, until modern times, China arguably had the longest-lasting, stablest political system any country has ever had. Throughout most of the dynasties that ruled over a unified China, it wasn't a democracy, but it was a meritocracy. Only the emperor was a hereditary position. Everyone else was appointed based on their performance in the extremely detailed, onerous civil service exam, which in theory, anyone could take. If you did really well on the civil service exam, you might get hired as a magistrate. If you were a really good magistrate, maybe your boss would hire you to be the prefecture mayor. If you were a really good mayor, maybe you'd get transferred to a bigger city you'd never been to and serve as mayor there. if you were a really good mayor there, maybe you'd be promoted to provincial governor. Maybe not the same province as the one you were mayor in, usually a different province. This is exactly how the Chinese political system works today. In fact, many of the provinces have the same names and same borders that they've had for centuries. The civil service exam officially no longer exists, but there's a ranking system for the 10 million civil servants with 27 different levels on it, from village party secretaries all the way up to the ruler of the country, and doing well on regular exams is the main way you move up on the ladder. Not too long ago, Mao commanded Chinese people to smash the four olds: old ideas, old customs, old culture, and old habits. In those days, you sure didn't want to point out how much the new system resembles the old one. Today, though, I think if you phrase it right, the modern CCP would be proud of that comparison. There's increasing interest in looking back fondly on China's pre-communist history. Confucius is being taught in schools again. Dressing up in traditional Hanfu is becoming popular. They've built a whole fake Forbidden City for filming historical dramas in the southern state of Zhejiang. And everywhere you go, you hear the exhortation that China has 5,000 unbroken years of history. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. And if the old boss claimed Tibet as his territory, well, then they're happily willing to admit that it's been the same system all along. Realistically, modern China would probably have found some other way to justify claiming Tibet if the Qing dynasty hadn't invaded to kick out the Dzungars. And according to most sources, Zhongyang Gyatso, the 6th Dalai Lama, was not a dumb frat boy. He was smart, witty, well-read, and a devout Buddhist, just not devout enough to forswear earthly pleasures. Again, he's still well-remembered in the Tibetan cultural sphere. Just last year, a mountain in northern India, near the modern-day site of Zhongyang's birth, but so remote it didn't have a name before, got named after him. But it's charming to believe that all of Tibet's modern problems can be chased back to a chain reaction of invasions, set off by the time the Dalai Lama just couldn't keep it in his pants.